श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय। श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय। श्री श्री दाऊजी गोपाल की जय। श्री ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय। श्री नई वेणुगीत की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रमाण डीपलिंग All of you, welcome. Thanks for joining us. And we are continuing today with the series of our series of lectures about Venugit, right? Okay. So we have been, for those who are visiting us, coming today. This is a series of lecture we have started like a month ago or something. So today is class 19. So we are describing a little bit the section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is one of the main devotional texts from ancient India. And this chapter of this book is called Venugita, or the Song of the Flute. And basically, it has to do with the effects of Krishna's flute. Maybe all of us know about Krishna and his flute, as we say in one class, if you put, at least in India, if you put a flute and a peacock feather, immediately you know what's the implication of that. No? This is Krishna. So this whole chapter basically presents the effects of the flute playing of Krishna, which is parallel to the clarion call, or the divine call from the divine to us, to open our hearts and give ourselves in love to that higher call. Basically, the flute, this is what it represents. And how that flute call is impacting on Krishna's greatest devotees, if you will, as they are known in the Bhagavatam, like the gopis. The gopis are cowherd milk maidens who live in a very idyllic village called Vrindavan. And they, in one sense, are very simple-minded person, but at the same time, that simplicity is quite complex, if you will. It includes a whole range of divine feelings and emotions that they express one verse after the other. And interestingly, the way they express their love for Krishna and their love for and the effects of the flute is not so much by them speaking how the flute is impacting on them, but how they are projecting their own feelings towards the environment. In other words, as we say the other day, no? If you are full of envy, probably you will feel that envy is all around you. Because you have put that those lens, like red glasses, and everything looks red. Nothing is red, maybe, but you see everything red. You are filtering reality through your prejudice, if you will. But interestingly, according to devotional Vedanta, the same thing can happen with divine love. When you are in love, you are just seeing everything is in love, basically. You are seeing love everywhere. You're seeing inspiration, and so you are projecting your own overflowing to the environment. So this Venugita is a very interesting example of that, in which all along most of the verses, which are 20 in the whole chapter, these gopis, these cowherd girls, instead of saying, I feel this for Krishna, the flute is impacting in me in this way, they are just saying, oh, look how the river is reacting to Krishna's flute. Look how the cloud is reacting. Look how the deers are reacting. Look how the birds. Look how the cows. Look at everything around it, including inanimate objects that come to life by the vision, loving vision of the gopis. So each one of the verses, mostly in this Venugita, the dynamic of this verse is that in every verse, the gopis are appreciating the particular loving expression of one single species in Vrindavan. Next verse, they go to another species. And they appreciate that, and they pray, oh, just if we will have that particular type of love ourselves. Instead of thinking the opposite, no? I'm the one special, nobody has anything, only me. Actually, they are thinking, everyone has so many things, and I could be so benefited if I get to get that. No? So this is a basic dynamic of the verses. It's a very deep and esoteric chapter of the Bhagavatam, section of the Bhagavatam in itself. So do not, as I always say to everyone, not only someone who is hearing this for the first time, but even if you're hearing this for some years already, do not get discouraged if you do not understand some of the things, because it's quite deep. Or maybe you may think, I understood completely, and maybe after 10 years you realize I didn't understand anything. But that's part of the understanding process, so that's also good. But in case something is going above our heads, as our spiritual guide, Guru Maharaj, says, if at least you can just grasp one thing that you can take and incorporate in your life and represent some value for making you a better version of yourself, just one thing in the whole lecture, that the whole lecture was justified. Because we are trying to approach divine knowledge. So the right attitude to approach divine knowledge is not trying to, I will understand everything. It's never possible. There's always something more. So that keeps us in a humble position through which higher and higher education will come to us. So, some brief introduction. So, we all survived this intense narrative that we will share now. And today, again, we are in our 19th meeting. So, we have already been here for quite a long time and also entering into the last. Today, we will see verse 17, which I don't think we will be able to see in one single lecture. So, maybe first half of it. And there are 20 verses, so we only have four verses remaining for our study. So hopefully we can finish that in the next, 10 days? Yeah, that'll be here. So apart from the introduction, let's share some brief recap of the last verse, as we are doing every single class, some brief summary of our previous lecture, in which we studied verse 16. And in this case, the turn was for the, remember? The clouds, exactly. In the previous verse to that one, the gopis were appreciating the good fortune of the rivers. So somehow the watery connection continued in the next verse. Because you have the rivers, eventually the water of the rivers evaporates, and we have clouds. So in this verse, the gopis are speaking about how Krishna, with Balaram, his brother, and his friends, his cowherd boys, the gopas, are in the fields. They are cowherds by profession. That's their business in their divine realm. Interestingly, we are speaking about a god that is presenting himself in such informal way. That's the god we worship. God is unlimited. He has unlimited forms. And this is one that becomes like that because of the type of affection that is surrounding him, as we always say. If there is a particular, very deep, intimate affection, no matter how important you are in the world, you will behave intimately. No matter if you are the president of the United States or whatever, if your grandson approaches you, you won't behave like the president. You will behave like a grandfather. So you become something according to the affection that is approaching you. So God is not exception to that rule, at least for us. So according to a particular desire and an intimate affection, he presents in this unique form that we call Krishna. He has a brother, and he has friends. All the things that we have, why he cannot have, basically, that's our claim. So here the gopis are visualizing in the distance Krishna being in the forest with his brother Balaram, with his friends, with the cows. In the autumn season, all this is happening in the autumn season, but it's a particularly hot day. So there's a considerable sun, intense heat. So seeing this, the clouds appear on a scene, trying to render some service to Krishna, and appear offering their bodies as a giant umbrella and cover him, his friends, his brother, his cows, quite a few people, big clouds, big umbrella, out of love, and starting to pour very soft raindrops, not only covering him, but sending some like very soft raindrops to relieve them from the heat of the autumn. So flower-like raindrops are described in the Bhagavatam. This section and the Bhagavatam, this book in itself is really poetic. A lot of poetry is there because, as our Guru Maharaj say, when you have to speak about the highest reality, poetry is the language. Because highest reality is love, falling in love, and when you fall in love, everything is poetry. You see everything, again, with the lens of poetry, everything is romantic and harmonic and perfect and so on. So again, the gopis, by the nature of their love for Krishna, in their shyness and in their purity, they are trying to hide that. They are not making a public show of that. So they are, in this case, hiding that by directing their own love to, the, in this case, the Sakya department. or the category of the friends, of someone who has a friendly relationship to Krishna. They project this idea, all the clouds in Vrindavan are having Sakya, are having a friendly connection with Krishna. And they start to see similarities among them. Krishna has the color of the dark cloud, they have a similar hue, they have a similar nature, the cloud gives relief to the afflicted. If you are very hot, clouds come like today. Some water even. So Krishna, similarly, he's an ocean of compassion. He gives relief to the afflicted. The two of them pour some liquid nectar, the cloud's water, Krishna the nectar of his flute sound. Krishna has also their thunder and their, what is the other name, the other word? Lightning and thunder. So that's compared to Krishna's pitambara, or yellow cloth, and the sound of his flute as well. So the cloud think, oh, here's another cloud, not one of us, not equality. So they approach Krishna in those equal terms, like friends. Friends are equals, no? That's the relationship. So it is described that in this particular season, seeing the heat of the autumn, Krishna plays Malarag on his flute. Malarag is a particular tune in Indian music, a particular composition which is destined to invoke rain. If you know how to play it, it will be raining. Maybe Murli was playing Malarag today. Who knows? We'll ask him later. So the Malarag was there, Murli, today? And that's why it was rain, extraordinary rain today? That's because you play Malarag?
No.
Okay, don't be humble. So then, again, the clouds are expanding out of Prem. They're enlarging their size, enlarging their service capacity, and throwing flowers onto Krishna in the form of raindrops. Those are their flowers. They're offering their bodies by expanding themselves, the clouds, and they're offering their very essence, which is water, in the form of these raindrops to create some relief and service. Or some of our masters, acharyas, have commented, actually, they are the denizens of heaven throwing flowers to glorify Krishna. And that some of them get stuck in the clouds, and the clouds are like releasing them, whatever the case. So, as usual, in every single verse, the gopis conclude by saying, let us pray to be born in our next life as clouds. So we can offer Krishna this type of service, we can offer this type of relief or whatever he needs, that we are not able to do now. Because in this particular situation, the gopis are in a stage of the unfolding of the relationship with Krishna, which is called Purvarag, which means like when you are fall in love with someone, but still none of the parts have officially acknowledged the feeling. There are glances, maybe some messages, whatever, no? Indirect things, but not like the consummation of the relationship. So that's the particular stage in which Krishna and the gopis who love Krishna romantically, of course not mundane romanticism but divine eros, they are in that stage. So they are not yet able to consummate their relationship with Krishna, and everything around them is pushing them in that direction more and more and more and more. That's the function of all these sections. So in that ecstasy, in that divine love, they are praying, let us be born as clouds. Generally, that's not a classical prayer you will hear from people. I want to be born as a cloud. But in their divine madness of divine love, they're praying like that. Even saying, oh, these clouds come and go. They do not stay fixed in Vrindavan even. They are not Rajavasis, technically speaking. But nonetheless, see their fortune and see our lack of fortune. Let's pray so we can be blessed by them and so on. So that was a brief, not so brief, recap of Tuesday's class. So we will continue today with today's verse, which is verse 17. So we will go from the clouds to the Pulindis. Pulindis will be like a certain tribe of ladies and their partners who live outside the village of Braj, and how they smear themselves, we will see, with the kumkum of the saffron powder paste that comes from Krishna's lotus feet. So let's first recite the mantra, the verse in Sanskrit, and then we will translate, explain it word by word, and try to unpack its content. So it says like this. We can recite it all together. Purna Pulindya Urugaya Padabjaraga Shri Kunkumena Daitastana Manditena Tadharshanasmara Rujastrina Rushitena Limpantyanana Kuchisu Jahustada Dhamin. So, translation says, the aborigine woman of the Vrindavan area become disturbed by lust when they see the grass marked with reddish kumkum powder. Endowed with the color of Krishna's lotus feet, this powder originally decorated the breasts of his beloveds, and when the aborigine woman smear it on their faces and breasts, they feel fully satisfied and give up all their anxiety. So this is the verse directed to the aborigine woman, sometimes called Pulindis. So, of course, some brief clarification that we already made some class ago, but we can always make it over and over again. When we hear words like they are disturbed by lust, it's important to understand that here the lust that is referred in Sanskrit by words as kama or others do not actually refer to the agitation that we may experience materially speaking, because we have lust, we have greed, we have anger, all these type of things that ideally from a yogic perspective are to be transcended eventually, gradually integrated properly in a healthy way. But in this case, when it is spoken that this lady felt lust, it refers to romantic attraction towards Krishna in a spiritual sense. So again, it's pretty maybe uncommon idea. Generally, we don't hear about people getting attracted to God in a romantic way. But if we do some research, we will find that notion is not exclusive to our tradition. You can even study in Christianity the Song of Songs and things like this, when actually the person is expressing a desire towards God in a romantic feeling. But again, totally devoid of exploitation and selfish desire, which may be difficult to conceive if we are not free from that on a certain degree. But that's the setting that is always explained here. When we hear things like this, the lady was agitated by lust, and our mind may run in one particular direction that we already know of. So our masters always like caution. Thank you. Caution us about be careful of not projecting your experience into their experience. Here we are speaking about something totally different, because as we know, the person who is narrating these verses, who is Sukadeva Goswami, is described from the very beginning of the book as someone who had no attachment to this world whatsoever, no attraction to this, to anything from this world. And he was totally attracted to this type of narratives, which means they have nothing to do with this world, because if not, how that person who is not attracted to anything in this world will be attracted to this. Although it seems like something from this world, by paying proper attention and studying under proper guidance, you realize this is supramundane. That's called in Sanskrit aprakrita, which means it seems ordinary, but actually super extraordinary if you pay close attention. And of course, if we take the time to analyze and study this in context. Because as we always say, a text without context becomes a pretext. So, especially in Sanskrit and our particular tradition, context is everything. So here it is described how these ladies, from aborigine ladies, at one point saw the grass. They didn't see Krishna. They saw the grass from the forest, from the village where they live, like tainted, you see, with this powder called kumkum. We will explain what is that. It's like a reddish powder that decorates Krishna's foot soles. So just by seeing that powder and connecting, knowing where that powder is coming from, they became romantically, transcendentally, romantically affected. So, and that powder, as is described here, comes from the heart, from the chest of one of the beloveds of Krishna. And these ladies took that powder and smeared that on their faces and on their hearts as well. And they attained full satisfaction by doing that. So let's try to unpack the implications of all this. But as usual, first of all, let's give a meaning of the word by word of the verse, Sanskrit verse. So first line says, Purna Pulindya Urugaya Padabja Raga. Purna, what does it mean, Purna? Full, complete, etc. Here it's translated as complete or fully satisfied. How these ladies attain full satisfaction, Purna. Pulindya. Pulindya is the name of this aboriginal woman coming from one tribe called Pulinda. So they are called, the females of the tribe are called Pulindis. The males are Pulindas. Then comes the word Urugaya. Urugaya is one of the many names of Krishna, the particular name that appears in this verse. So we will explain what does it mean, but basically it means he who is praised by very selected song, or he who sings in a very special way. Padabja raga. So pada abja. Pada abja means from the lotus feet. Pada abja. Abja means lotus and pada means feet. And raga. Raga means, in this case, reddish. Because this kumkum, this powder, is reddish in color. As we already explained some days ago, raga means, well, also, I mean, many things. But raga also means like affection or attachment. So there will be a, this is a pun, a play of words in which we will see a connection between the words, speaking about the color of Krishna's foot soul, but also speaking about a particular emotion. Because colors, as we always say, represent emotions. We're going to say you have like dark colors, happy colors, or I don't know, they attach emotions to the colors, right? Dry colors or warm colors, cold colors, whatever. No? So first line. Second line, Sri Kumkumena Daitashtana Manditena. So Sri Kumkumena. Here comes the kumkum, which is this, it's like a saffron paste. Paste made of saffron. So Sri, the word Sri has many meanings. I don't think we'll speak today about that next class, but also sometimes it's like splendor, beauty. So that kumkum, that saffron paste, was endowed with splendor, basically. What that splendor about, we'll see. Daitastana manditena. So daitastana manditena means which was an adornment on the breasts of the beloved, basically. Daita means beloved. Stana means breast or heart or chest, this section. And manditena means it was an ornament. So that powder, which was, as we will see, on the grass, actually came from originally from Krishna's, some of Krishna's beloved. We will see who she was. Then to Krishna's feet, then to the grass, and then to the pulindis, as we see. There is some sequence here. So that's the second line. Third line. Tadarshana smara rujas trina rushitena. So tadarshana means by seeing darshana, tat means that. So by seeing that means the kumkum. By this lady seeing that on the where? Smara rujas trina rushitena. Here comes a different order, but trina rushitena. Trina means grass, as you know. Trina adapisunichena. Trina. And rushitena means attached. Like attached to the grass, by seeing that, smara rujas, that comes before in the Sanskrit, but in our translation goes after. Smara rujas means, what's smara? Sorry? Cupid, okay. And ruja means like feeling the torment of Cupid, which is a poetic way of saying being romantically inspired. Again, there are different ways as the poets express this. So by seeing this powder attached to the grass, this pulindis became affected by Cupid, romantically agitated in a transcendental way. And the last line says, Limpantya anana kuchesu jahustad adim. No, Limpantya anana kuchesu jahustad adim. That's a meter. So Limpantya means while smearing. Now it is described what did they do with that powder, basically. So first, they smeared. Anana means on their faces. Makeup. Unique makeup. All your face is red. Generally, you don't make, I'm going to the party with all red face, like, what's going on? But again, they are agitated by love. So if you end up doing things that generally you are not supposed to be and end up doing. When you are in love, I mean, who knows what you will end up doing. So limpantia anana kuchasu. So anana faces, kuchasu, breasts or the heart section. So they smear that on their faces and here as well. Jahus tat adim. Jahu means they gave up. Tat adim. Their mental pain. So by doing that, in other words, they were able to be fully satisfied and abandon their original agitation that they felt when they saw. When they saw the powder, they were agitated by Cupid. When they smeared the powder on their bodies, they experienced relief from that. So basically, this is the content of this verse, word by word meaning. So let's go to the explanation of it. Some many interesting things to say. So again, remember, the gopis in the previous verse were speaking about the clouds, and they were trying to hide their own feelings by directing the attention towards the Sakya category, Sakya department, and trying somehow to dilute whatever is coming to the forefront. But as you can see, it didn't last for long. After that, now they are again converging into one example, which is also in Madhuryabha, as we see others before also, the deer, the devis, and so on, rivers. So by the gopis contemplating the situation of the Pulinda girls, the Pulindis, the gopis themselves again become completely absorbed in their own bhava, in their own madhurya. Madhurya is a way of referring to the romantic attraction towards Krishna. Madhurya means sweet, actually. So representing that's the sweetest type of connection with God, or Madhu. Of course, as we always say, there are other options that you can relate with Krishna because not every person likes sweet that much. Which is okay. I may tell you, objectively speaking, which is the sweetest fruit? I may say mango. And which is your favorite fruit? Not necessarily mango. You may say apple. And I will tell you, but that's not the sweetest. I know, but it's not my favorite. What to do? That's my tongue. Someone and you will experience full satisfaction with something that is not the sweetest. It doesn't mean it's not. I mean, that's the best for you, and it's okay. But objectively speaking, we cannot speak about a hierarchy of sweetness. So in this case, Madhurya Bhav is connected to this extreme sweetness. But again, sweetness is everywhere in Vrindavan. It's not that Madhurya Bhav is sweet and the other things are not sweet. We sang recently this song by Balabhacharya, remember? Madhurashtakam. And basically there he says everything is sweet in Vrindavan. Everything about Krishna is sweet. But there are degrees according to the longing of one's tongue, if you will, inner tongue. So, here the gopis are speaking about the Pulindis, who again, the Pulindis do not live in Vrindavan, as we will see, but they live in the outskirts of Vrindavan. So the question is, are the gopis with the Pulindis in this moment, or how they are saying or seeing what they are seeing? And again, as usual, no, the gopis are not there. Many of these verses, the gopis are in the village of Vrindavan and visualizing in trance, in samadhi, what's going on in the distant situation with Krishna in the forest, or in this case with the Pulindis in some other part of the forest. So we'll see they happen to go to the forest to pick wood and things like this. So they have a vision from their homes, if you want to say that word. For them, their homes are not their homes, but whatever. And from then they narrate the verse. No, that can happen. We, for example, in the great Bhagavad Gita, we all have heard that, how the Bhagavad Gita begins, with someone having a vision of something happening in the distance. That person is Sanjaya. Remember Sanjaya? And Sanjaya is sitting there with Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra is blind. So he's asking his secretary, Sanjaya, please tell me what's going on in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And Sanjaya is not in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he's seated in the palace with Dhritarashtra, but he was blessed by his Gurudev, Vyasa, to see not only what's happening in the battlefield externally, but even what's going on in the minds of each one of the warriors. So you can imagine. Those possibilities are there. One can receive that type of mysticism, mystic vision, and so on. So if that happens, the point is, with some jaya, what to speak of the gopis? Even though they do not seem too much like overtly mystical people, no? But they are topmost mystics. Naturally, when that's necessary, that plays out immediately. So let me share some words by Srila Sanatana Goswami in his commentary to this verse. He's one of our main teachers, the main commentator, or the first one from the Gaudiya Sampradaya, I would say. And he will present some words paraphrasing the gopis in connection to the previous verse and this one. As usual, there is like some thread, some connection between one verse and the other. So the gopis say, according to Sanatana Goswami's vision, another seer, they go to say, "So be it. The cloud who does that kind of service and who won Krishna's friendship by rendering assistance to all has good fortune." That has been established. That's a fact, previous verse. "Can even just the good fortune of the woman of this low stratum of society, who are sometimes rejected as being considered outcasts, be described?" Here, and Sanatana Goswami continues, "Here not only the Pulindis, but all the women belonging to this stratum, such as the Bilas or others who roam in the woodlands, are worthy of being included here due to fellowship." So what's the meaning of this, of being outcast and stuff like this? This is difficult to imagine for us in our present time and society, because we don't live in a society that is ruled by what's called Varna Ashram, or this divisions in society according to different situations, and which is also, well, it's a long topic, I won't enter into that, but it's important to understand it properly. It's not just like, how is it in English? Caste system, as it is sometimes negatively depicted, like discriminating stuff, and this goes there and this goes there, but actually a social organization in which people are engaged according to their proclivities and nature, acquired nature. I mean, everyone has a certain nature, and it's important they know. They get to attain a livelihood, if you will, an education that may nourish that nature and they attain fulfillment and so on. So, in that connection, there are certain people that at those times, in that particular system, which also exists in the Leela, interestingly, due to certain nature and habits, were considered sometimes called outcasts, which implies they were not following certain principles which are generally, at least considered from the perspective of Varna Ashram, proper for civilized people, basically. No? So people that, for example, and again, I know this may sound extreme in our Western society, postmodern times and so on, but for example, in that system, if you are, for example, eating meat, you are not considered as, that's not considered as something very civilized. And of course, nowadays in this world, the opposite may happen. If I say, "I'm vegetarian, I'm vegan," they're like, "Whoa, you're an outcast." They won't use that word, but somehow may feel, "You are weird." I mean, not so much now, but I remember when I started being vegetarian, like, what, 25 years ago? I mean, it was not that popular at that time yet. So it was like, where did you leave the UFO? So this type of notions, no? Different perspectives and cultural things, so many things to consider for properly understanding them. They are also called adivasis, this type of people, or sometimes again outcasts, if you will, in the sense of they, according to how they act and behave, they do not fit with the general options, official options that in which this system is divided. But nonetheless, of course, they have a place in society. It's not that they are like, disappear, we don't want to see you or something. But they do not engage in the main classical fourfold division of that system called Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. But they belong to, if you will, a fifth group. And they have their occupation for sure. And of course, that's an important point here, because what was the point of the Bhagavatam and our teachers here is that even if you have a very low birth, low in this particular sense. If you are not being born in aristocratic, Brahminical, like priestly class, educated class, intellectual, refined class, it can happen. And you are born in a society, in a family, or in with a nature that, according to all this, means outcast. That's not a problem. According to our bhakti tradition, if you take shelter in bhakti, bhakti will upgrade your condition to a point that goes even beyond all these different castes and positions in society, Brahman, and you can become even more of the you can be situated above the highest Brahman. There are so many verses in Shastra about that. So that's one of the main points of this verse. The Gopis are pointing to someone who has a very low birth, externally speaking, but who is exhibiting the highest love for Krishna. So, the point is, even if you are born in the worst possible circumstance, still you have the potential to attain the highest thing. Because the highest thing is so high, so generous, that it has the capacity to go down to the lower realms and uplift us from there. And of course, first time I read this verse, Pulind is being outcast and so on, I thought, no, Pulind is not, it's me. I was not born in Varnashram, with Brahminical status and blah, blah, blah. I have not that. I'm an outcast, technically speaking. And most of us from the West, according to that perspective, is the same. But again, that's not speaking about who we are, ultimately. And that's not speaking especially about all that we can be. That's the main point here, which is our potential. Do not over-identify, I was born in this country, in this body, with this society. All these are upadis, or temporary designations. But bhakti, which is the internal potency of Bhagavan, of the Divine, is so pure and so merciful that it has the capacity to uplift even the most falling. And there are so many statements in our Shastra, in our scriptures about that. That was said by Mahaprabhu. No, it doesn't matter to me if you are a Brahman, kiva vipra, kiva nyasi, if you are a sannyasi, all these are the highest possible posts in Vedic society. Or sudra kinenai. Sudra means the opposite, like the lowest part of the system. I don't care about that. He said, say Krishna tattva vita e guru hai. If someone knows the truth about Krishna, that person is my guru, he said. I'm not looking for a guru who is Brahmin, Indian, male, female, blah, blah, or blah. No? I'm just looking for the essence. If that person has love for the divine, I don't care if it's a Pulindi who was born in an origin, tribe, uncivilized, whatever. And the Bhagavatam itself has so many examples of that. You have the famous example of Britrasura. In my previous visit, we went through the verse of Britrasura, which represent the, in one sense, the essence of all the things that here are being more clearly unpacked. Four prayers of Britrasura. Britrasura was born in what we call a Asuric family, or a demoniac family, or so, like officially. No? That's the label, Asura. And he offered, incredible prayers to Krishna. Prahlad Maharaj, again, he was born from Hiranyakashipu. It is said in the Shastra, Hiranyakashipu was the worst possible person you can even conceive of. Like the most materialistic, selfish, exploitative person. And his son was born from that, with that blood, if you will, from that lineage, but was the topmost saint. And so on. Namacharya Sila Haridas Thakur. And so many things we can say, but I don't want to go too much into detail, but that's the main point. So we do not feel like actually the Bhagavatam is discriminating anyone. Actually, the opposite is being established here. Even if you are born in such a situation, the highest doors are open to you. And be careful if you are born in a high situation, because you may get proud of that. You may go down. If you are born in a low situation, that may help. So you remain humble. Do not think, I'm this, I'm that. And from that, you get further and further upgraded. So again, these Pulindis are part of a tribal group, different tribes like Sabara or Pulinda. And it is said that some of the men from that tribe generally in Vrindavan act as palanquin carriers, in the towns and villages of Vrindavan. That's the man's engagement in that dynamics. Or tilling the fields or digging, this type of works, menial labors and so on. So again, they are not out of society altogether. They have their place. And their wives, the female members of the family, some daughters and so on, sometimes when they are not busy at home, they go from forest to forest, forest in their spare time. They pick, collect dry wood or cow dung, which is used in India for, as how do you say in English? Fuel. Dry, of course, cow dung. This very, very good fuel. Or varieties of edible leaves from the forest and fruits and roots. So in that's the situation here. The Pulindis are in one of those situations and they find this kumkum in the grass. So generally, because of the social dynamics of the Leela, the social dynamics of this divine play of Krishna in Vrindavan on earth some thousands of years ago, as it is kind of about, and Krishna is not coming near these Pulindis. They do not have like close association. They, all of them respect, if you will, certain codes of society. So they have social etiquette, like what Krishna showed when he met the Dvijapatnis, also the wives of the Brahmins who were engaged in sacrifice. They want to join Krishna. And Krishna said, you're Brahmins, I'm Vaishya, there is something to be upgraded here yet. And of course, eventually they get the chance, but not they're trying to show there has to be some compatibility also mood and nature. So in certain situations you may not have that, but of course again if you are sincere you will get to that particular point eventually. So in this case the Pulindis are not associating directly with Krishna, but they are in the area of Vrindavan, working sometimes there nearby the forest, so they are not deprived of hearing the flute. Because we know Krishna plays the flute, and it is not only heard in the immediate surroundings, but somehow the Vayudev, no, the god of the wind, and everyone makes all the arrangement with the breezes, so the sound of the flute is expanding everywhere else in the whole area. So when they hear the flute, they start to become captured by that and to speak about Krishna. We all know how they get to know different Leelas, stories about Krishna, and Krishna Prem starts to manifest in their heart. Divine love starts to manifest in their heart. Actually, indeed, everyone in Vrindavan, in this divine village, had this divine love. If you study, for example, Raghunath Das Goswami's Braja Vilas Stava, that's a very serious, nice series of verses when he depicts all the different inhabitants of Vrindavan, flowers, trees, animals, humans, how everything expresses their love for Krishna. So, these Pulindis are not an exception to the rule. In his Govinda Lilamrita, Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami also mentions these Pulindis in one chapter that has to do with the Bamsi Chori Lila. Bamsi Chori or Benu Chori Lila, which is the Lila where Krishna's flute is being stolen. Because we already mentioned something like that, no? Because Krishna plays the flute, and that flute mesmerizes everyone. And stops everyone from doing what they are doing. Everyone becomes like stunned in ecstasy. So at one point the gopis say, this flute is like, creating a whole chaos in the whole village. So let's take that flute for a minute. Let's steal the flute from Krishna. Of course, they love the flute. It's not that they are against that, but it's a way of creating some further dynamics in the relationship. So sometimes Krishna is with his flute, but for some particular reason, there are many of these Leelas, the flute is being stolen. So, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami say that seeing Krishna's distress at realizing his flute's loss, Krishna say, where's my flute? Lalita, who is one of the gopis, leader one, say, oh, crown jewel of the devotees, why are you so concerned about a dry piece of bamboo? Now, if you know who is Lalita, you will understand her tone, you say? She's quite bold, and she will speak to Krishna intensely. At Govardhan, which is the sacred hill in Vrindavan, at Govardhan there are two Pulinda girls who are our sakis, like we know them, our friends, basically. They are expert in the art of wood carving. Remember, they pick wood, they work with wood, like artisans. So Lalita says to Krishna, if you just give me the word, I will get you 10 or 20 pieces of bamboo with so many holes. No, like implying, what's so special about that flute? I mean, I can bring you 20 if you want now. Of course, that's quite special, and that's why they stole that. But that's the way that they... Or even sometimes one day, Shishirada and Krishna are playing dice, and they're like, how do you say in English? Apuesta? No, apuesto, apuesta. Apuesta. Like, I am... Okay, we are playing. The one who wins have to give this. The one who loses have to... There's one word.
Gambling.
Not gambling. I mean, you know what I mean. Sorry, I'm exercising my English with you. Stake, at stake. That's the word I was calling, yeah. Mm-hmm. So to say one day they are playing the dice, and Shirada one day he puts at stake one of the pulling the girls. No. So if she loses, she will receive Krishna's embrace. I mean, that's pretty good reward for losing. So that's the way she put at stake. So we see that also they have some interaction with the gopis. It's not that they are outcast and I don't want to see you or anything, but they have their participation in the lila here and there. So, for example, they collect in their visits to the forest different flowers also, and they are garland makers. So sometimes they give to the Braja gopis garlands and flowers that they end up offering to Krishna. So somehow they are engaged in Krishna service, if you will. So they're made like, or basically they collect flowers or some other things from the forest, and the gopis made with them necklaces and jewels and ornaments and different things for presenting to Krishna. And it is in that context that the gopis, being pleased with the service and help that the pulindis are given to them, that they, the gopis, sometimes speak Harikatha to them, to the pulindis. And that's how the pulindis also get to know more in detail about Krishna and his lila, his pastime, because the gopis themselves share with them many of the things. So by the association of someone so powerful as the gopis, of course, we'll see how these tribal girls are infused with prem. So that's, of course, an important point for us, which is how this bhakti is transferred from one heart to another. Like the example of the bumblebee who is, how is it in English? Pollinating. So it takes taking some pollen from one flower, going to another flower, and creating the epidemics there, if you will. So similarly, bhakti, which is not inherent, is transferred from one heart. It's a heart-to-heart transaction. So if you have love and you associate intimately or closely with someone who has the love, you start to acquire some scars or impression from that person. So in this case, we see the importance of this point. The influence of the association of a Mahapurush or a great personality is extremely powerful. It's extremely miraculous. It can change our whole life because we are a product of our environment. So you tell me who you associate with, and I will tell you who you are, basically. Your sense of identity comes from the environment that surrounds you, and that is somehow dictating who you are, or who you should be, or whatever. So if we expose ourselves to another type of environment with another values and another ideals, and we open our heart to that, we'll start to see, oh my God, I'm starting to be something else, to change. I mean, I'm the same person, but at the same time, I'm not the same person. What's going on? My potential starts to like to blossom. But for that, you need proper place. No, like the seed will fructify, but if you put not here, but in a proper land, proper earth, proper work, proper weeding, similar here. So, by proper company, anything can happen. Whatever, the wildest miracle you can conceive and more, that can happen in the proximity of enlightened people. So here we have an example, the pulindis and the gopis. Also something interesting, and I may extend some minutes with your permission, one symptom of the purvarag that the gopis are experiencing, remember purvarag is this ecstatic love, ecstatic falling in love when they have not yet consummated their connection with Krishna. But one of the symptoms that show how pure this love is that it's totally devoid of envy. So when the gopis see that someone else is attracted to Krishna romantically, they do not feel jealous. It's not feeling, oh, competition is here. I want to be the only one. Nobody else. Which is, of course, the standard of romantic love in this world, basically. No, it's not that, okay, I'm in love with him and him and him and him and her and her, and you're married. I say, well, I have 74 other wives. Generally, that won't happen. I mean, that may happen, but that won't work. But here we are speaking about another type of romanticism in which that works. No? Because there's no selfishness. Nobody's trying to take from anyone, interestingly. It's just all of them concentrated to give to the center. Of course, Krishna represents the center. He's not any mundane husband. So that's the difference. No? Generally, our husbands on earth are not Krishna. So, and it's okay that it's limited in that way, the relationship, because again, it's not Krishna. But when we speak about the absolute, unlimited possibilities come. So, it is said that when the gopis see someone else attracted to Krishna, not only they do not feel jealous or nor envious, but their own attraction to Krishna increases, grows exponentially. By seeing others' attraction. That's the idea. I love that person. I see you love that person. Oh, now I love more than that person. And I love you also because you love that person that I love. That's the dealing. That's how it works. It's not like, not only me, not you, because we are speaking about, again, the perfect object of love. So all loving approaches will find satisfaction there. So try to remember, and at this point of the Purva Raga unfolding, the gopis do not see Krishna too much per day. They only see Krishna twice a day, when he's going to the forest with his friends and cows, when he's returning from the forest with his friends and cows. Those are the two moments of the day the gopis can have a glimpse of Krishna, and that indirectly, not like with telescope or something. They just can silent glances and Krishna is, and those two moments are especially crowded. Krishna's leaving for the forest, the whole event in Vrindavan, everyone is there. So it's not that Krishna is by himself and the gopis have a clear view. It's just Shodhananda, all the elders are surrounding Krishna, so the gopis have to catch some little glance, whatever. And when he returns, the same. All Vrindavan is dying in separation, and Godhuli, Krishna's returning, all Vrindavan rush to give him the welcome, and the gopis in the background, like from some moon tower or something, like trying to catch here and there. And the gopis themselves are busy with her household chores and so on. So again, it's not an easy situation, an easy dynamic. But all of that is increasing their love, as we always say. And the obstacles nourish their longing. If you really have longing for something, whatever obstacle comes in the way, that will only increase the attraction. If you say, I love you, but I have one obstacle, and I say, ah, no, I don't love you anymore, it's this obstacle. I say, ah, you never loved that person. If you really love someone, you put all the obstacles you want, and the love will only increase exponentially. So, let's share a little bit the sequence of this verse according to Sridhar Swami, the ancient commentator of the Bhagavatam. Because again, there is a sequence of what's going on here. So he says how the Pulindis attain Purnatva. Purna means complete, and Purnatva will mean like completeness. In Sanskrit, generally, you add the twa at the end, and it's like the ness in English, right? Something, or ship, depending on the case, right? Friendship, completeness. So the gopis attain Purnatva in, let's say, in four installments. First of all, we have the kumkum, this red powder, which is smeared on Krishna's girlfriend, lover, we'll see who she is, on her heart and chest and so on. Then, first part. Second, when these girls interacted with Krishna, this kumkum ended up in his feet. Second part. So that's the sequence of the whole thing. Third, Krishna is wandering in the forest, and the kumkum that was on his feet ends up being on the grass in the forest. Third. And fourth, by seeing that kumkum on the grass, the Pulindis become affected by Shmara, by Cupid. what may have happened if they would have seen Krishna directly. They just saw the powder that was on the grass, that was on Krishna's feet, in connection to one Lord. And that much indirect connection inspired prem in them. So again, if your antenna, inner antenna, is aligned in the proper place, even the most insignificant, quote-unquote, stimulant will be enough to create a forest fire, if you will, of attraction. So the Pulindis saw that, and they took the powder and smeared that again on their faces, breasts, and hearts. And they attained, therefore, purnatva, or completeness. But Sridhar Swami comments then, paraphrasing the gopis, he concludes his commentary saying, "By the gopis think, to hell with us, who are unable to find such means of eradicating the same distress." Because remember, the gopis are comparing, projecting their bhava to other beings and seeing how they are fortunate to obtain that, but we are not having that fortune yet. Yet. They will have the greatest fortune, but that's yet to come. The stage is being prepared for all these tensions and so on. This is a very nice point. Just by being in touch, going back to the Pulindis, just touching the powder that's on the grass that was on Krishna, they experience prem. So by contacting something that had some connection with the object of my love, even a so-called inert object, that can happen, that can create a very wonderful effect. Uddhav said that in the Bhagavad, Tvayu Pabukta Shraganda Basra Lankara Charchita Bojino, what's he say? Uchista Bojino, that says, Tavan Mayam Jayemahi. He says, Tvayu Pabukta Shraganda, but by us accepting your Shrag, your Ganda, Shrag means the garland you use, Ganda means the ointments you use. Then he said, "Uchista bhojanada," said the remnants of your food, we, your servants, will very swiftly conquer your illusory energy. So Uddhava is presenting that case by wearing with your clothes. Uddhava was a personal servant of Krishna in Dwarka. Krishna was a prince in Dwarka, so Uddhava was wearing, the only things he wore was whatever Krishna used, the remnants, we call it, of his clothes, Mahaprasad, prasadi clothes. He wore the garland Krishna used. He ate what Krishna ate, him, whatever was remaining, he took that. I say, by entering in touch with whatever enters in your contact, I'm conquering the illusory energy, which is Mama Maya Durateya, Krishna says in Gita. It's not easy to transcend Maya Shakti, the illusory energy. But here's a very user-friendly method. Try to enter in contact with those things that have entered in contact with Krishna. So that's our connection. That's similar to what we say before, entering in contact with a great personality. In Sanskrit it's called Dasa 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 Nudas. Krishna Mahaprabhu says that Gopi Bhartu Pada Kamalayo Dasa Dasa Nudas. So Sridhar Maharaj will say ours is the fifth position. We have Krishna, then we have Krishna Das, his eternal associates, Nitya Siddha, then we have Krishna Dasa Nudas, those who attain that position by practice sadhana siddha. Then we have Krishna Dasa Nudasa Nudas, those who have not attained perfection but who are advanced practitioners in that direction. And then we have Vikamdar. So we serve the ones who are serving, Krishna. And that's a very comprehensive approach to reality, because Krishna is included in the equation, but so many more there showing our blessings on us. These very important elements, we call them Mahamahaprasad. Sometimes Krishna Das Kaviraj speaks about that, the power of the water that washed the feet of the Vaishnav, the remnants of his food, and the dust from his hair feet. Those are very sacred items. And you even in this world see some, I mean, it's nothing in comparison. But I don't know, if you worship some rock star in your childhood, I don't know, Jimi Hendrix or something like that. I know I'm older than you, sorry for the out-of-date example. And he's your deity, and someone brings you, here I have a piece of wood from the guitar that he put on fire in, 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 in Monterey Pop Festival. He put on fire, he make a yagni out of that. Not sacred one. But here's this remaining piece of wood. And if you, worship that, for you, that piece of wood is like heaven. But for someone else, it's like, that's a piece of wood. What was the effect of that? But it's in connection to someone who for you is everything. Of course, it won't make you transcend Maya Shakti and give you prem. But my point is, how can affect you something that is in connection to something that for you is so important? So what to speak if that person is, with all respect to Jimi Hendrix, Krishna? So that's an important point made here. No? The connection, Guru Parampara, the connection with personalities through which we approach the Absolute. By approaching Krishna through different agents, the connection is not diluted. The more the parampara expands, the delivery is not further diluted, but on the contrary, each member of the succession is presenting their own contribution to enrich the current, if you will. So the more it expands, ideally, the more it becomes richer and thickened, if you will. Let's finish with some brief words from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami about the purport of this verse. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur first. He says in his Sarartha Darshini commentary, paraphrasing one gopi, he says, one gopi said, the one who spoke this verse, the Pulinda woman have reached perfection, but we have not. Therefore, we want to know what kind of austerities they have performed. Then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, this is the hint in the gopi's statement about the perfection of the Pulinda woman. Purna, they attain full satisfaction. They attain Purna Brahman, Sanatana, Sivatana, say, Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasisyate. You have the Guinness records of more Purna words in one verse. Invocation of Sri Upanishad and many other places. So that's Purna means complete. So Krishna is complete in every sense. If you attain the complete, you become complete, basically. Unless you attain the real complete all, you will be incomplete. And that's what we feel on every step in our life if we are not getting closer to the complete whole. So these Pulindas attain this condition of Purna. That's the word used in this verse. Complete. Fulfilled. Full satisfaction. Vishwanath continues saying, wandering without ornaments in the forest for gathering firewood, they attained the highest ornamentation and removed all suffering. So that's how the gopis expressed through Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. These ladies are in the forest. So if you go to the forest to pick wood and things, I don't think you will decorate that much. No, it's not time for makeup. No, you are going to the forest. Like if I tell you, okay, we have to cut some wood here in Madhuban. It's not that, okay, wait 1 minute that I have to put the eyeliner and the lipstick and say, we are going to the forest. And you can change clothes, but for entering the forest, not decorating, but undecorating. So here the gopis are saying, they were in the forest without any ornamentation, but they attained the highest ornamentation. They decorated themselves with somehow you could say, the dust of Krishna's feet in the form of this kumkum, which was in his feet. They were ornamented, but entering in connection with Krishna. Krishna in the Bhagavatam, he described how, among many ways, bhushana bhushanangam, paramparam bhushanam bhushanangam, which means he's the ornament of all ornaments. Generally, we use ornaments to beautify ourselves. Again, whatever each one does, or generally. But in this case, it's to say that Krishna is so much the personification of beauty that he doesn't need to ornament himself to become more beautiful. But we see that he has so many ornaments. Now here we have in the altar, we can appreciate so many ornaments. So you may say, he's not that nice without the ornament. He needs the ornaments to be beautiful. And I say, no. Actually, the ornaments become beautified by being in connection with him. He's so beautiful that whatever you put close to him becomes more beautiful. Because all his ornaments in our tradition are not just inert stuff, but conscious beings who want to render some service to Krishna. So if they don't have the chance to become an ornament in Krishna, they feel, oh, our lives are lost. So Krishna allows them to serve him in those forms, but actually the situation is the ornaments become ornamented. So that's Bhushana Bhushanangam. He's so beautiful that everything in connection to him becomes more beautiful. We included. So that's the idea. To beautify ourselves, that's the ultimate makeup. Let's go to Jiva Goswami's commentary, and with this we are all finishing. He describes the sequence of this verse similar as to Sridhar Swami mentioned, but from another interesting perspective. He says, describing what happens with the pulindis, right in the point of this verse, not to the background of it. So the pulindis see this kumkum, this red powder in the grass. So first they smell the kumkum from Krishna's feet. And immediately they experience unconceivable feelings of joy. Again, just by smelling something in connection with Krishna. But joy, but again, the torments of Cupid come. Again, it's a way of saying, it sounds bad, but it's totally glorious. You know, romantic attraction towards the divine. So in their hearts, they have this intense attraction by smelling the powder. So the necessity comes, okay, we have to do something more concrete with this powder so to alleviate these pangs of these arrows of Cupid. So they take the kumkum, you try to visualize the scene. No? You go, you see some powder on the grass. I mean, it's not so easy to take the powder. It's in the grass. But somehow they start like to take the powder from the grass, from the kumkum, and they start to apply that on their faces. Again, without a thought about how they looked. They have their whole faces red. Generally, you will feel, oh, if someone sees me here, I'm in a carnival or some whatever situation here. But they were totally absorbed in increasing their connection with Krishna. There is a very nice story. Do we have some minutes? Yeah. We have eternity, no problem. I remember first time I went to Vrindavan in India, Shamananda was there. When did, travel to many places. That was 2007, so some time ago already. Like what, 15 years ago or something? So I remember, among many things, of course, your first time there, everything is new, you don't understand many things. And there were some deities of Hanuman in Vrindavan. And they are painted like in orange. Or orange, reddish, intense. So I, with all my naivete, a first newcomer, I got close to the deities of Hanuman, because they are like not all of them in temples and altars, but some on the way in the streets in some spots. So I put my head on Hanuman. I offer like pranam. Hanuman is the monkey devotee of monkey, quote unquote, devotee of Sri Ramachandra. So I offer pranam. After a while, someone starts to laugh at me. I say, what's going on? So you have all your face like orange and red. And I realized, oh. And I went back and I touched, and it was like fresh painting, if it was to call. So I was like, whoa, what's going on? So I asked the locals, and they told me, no, one day a week, I don't remember, it was Wednesdays, or I think it was Wednesday or Tuesdays. There's one day a week, that Hanuman is painted in this color. And I, of course, ask why. Thanks for the information. I will know then on Tuesday, Wednesday, that will be still quite fresh. So I offer pranam from the distance. And they tell me, no, there's a story in the Ramayana that I didn't know at that point. And in brief, I won't make the story long. Hanuman met, one day he was meeting Sita Devi, who is Sri Ramachandra's wife. Ramachandra is another avatar or manifestation of Krishna, and Sita is Ramachandra's consort. There too appears kings, king and queen. So Sita has the sindur. No? Sindur is this red line that you will see in most of married Indian ladies, which has to do, it's a line that represents her chastity to her husband and something that will bring auspiciousness to the husband and give a long life to him and many like auspicious qualities in that connection. So Hanuman one day was seeing Sita, and he saw that, oh, what's that dread line in your hair? So Sita replied, oh, Sri Ram likes so much this. Oh. So you can imagine how the story ends. If you know who Hanuman is, you know his Baal. So he likes that a lot. Yes. Okay. So Hanuman made an abhishek of that. No, he took all the pots in the room of Sita where this sindoor was there, took all and smeared all over his body. And she said that Ramachandra was in a very like serious assembly. He was the king speaking with different people, and suddenly Hanuman enters the assembly totally like red and looking at Ramachandra. And Ramachandra is like, what's going on? What happened? And he said, well, I heard that you like this in Sita, this line. So if you like this line, I want to please you as much as I can. So here I am, fully embedded in that. He said that Ramachandra is embracing Hanuman. He himself becoming like this and saying, no, one day a week, you will be painted in this color to honor this particular past. And that's why in Vrindavan they paint on that particular day. And so that form of Hanuman is called Sindur Hanuman. Sindur Hanuman ki jai. So again, the point is, he's not considering how he looks, but how Ram feels. That's his consideration. How the object of my love will feel by this. Not how I look to society and what they will say, but how my beloved feels. If this gives pleasure to him, I don't care how I look. That's totally secondary. So that's a consideration. So, going back, the pulindis are smearing this on their faces, again, without considering how do we look, etc. And then it is said that when the heat of their divine romanticism is not subsiding yet, they take that and they rub it on their hearts, on their chests. Where the heart is, basically. Sometimes say on the breasts, and it has to do also with the connection of the heart. So there's a similar connection for those who like to research some other verse. If you go to 10th canto, chapter 83, verses 41, 42, the queens of Dwarka glorify something similar. Then they said, we do not desire this, we do not desire that, but we simply desire to carry in our heads the glorious dust from Lord Krishna's feet, enriched by the fragrance of kumkum from his consort's bosom. So some connection with this particular verse. Anyhow, one more thing. The name Urugaya, with that we'll end. I promise. 2 minutes. We are legally on time, and sometimes they end at 8, so it's 10 to 8, and still are in the legal context. Yeah, I've given classes of 3 hours, 4 hours. So I'm trying to control myself. So, in this verse, Krishna is called Urugaya, and as we mentioned in every verse of Venu Gita, Krishna receives at least one name and different names, and every name of Krishna has to do with something, has to do with some pastimes or some quality of him and so on. So, Urugaya can mean here he who sings. Gaya means sing, to sing. Gana means song, and Gaya means to sing. And Uru means many things. One of them is expansively. So Krishna is he who sings expansively. Of course, in this context, has to do the song of the flute, Venu Gita. So he sings through the flute in a very expansive way. I mean, everyone is hearing that, even the pulindis and getting affected by that, and the gopis, what to speak. Also, Uru Gaya means it's like he who is praised by the most selected songs, also can mean. And we have this name of Krishna also, Uttama Shloka, which is similar to that. He who is praised by Uttama Shloka, by the highest Uttam Shloka, verses of poetry. Ajudharati Vaipunsham, Dhyanastan Chayanaso, Ta. I want to get to that word. So you could have say Uttama Shloka, no, it's okay. or this idea is he whose verses glorifying him are the best. He who is glorified by the best verses, or he whose those verses glorifying him are the best. Those verses are the best because they glorify him. Sanatana Goswami connects this with the kirtan that the gopas are doing to Krishna. How they are. Gita Kirtan, verse 5, we mention how the Krishna entered the forest and all the gopas were composed. Spontaneous glorification for Krishna. Sanatana Goswami said, Krishna is sung is in many... No, this glorification is sung in many ways by cowherders. Or another meaning, he says, is he himself sings in many ways with the flute. And therefore, he is Uru Gaya. And Jiva Goswami adds to that, this is the reason why the gopis are losing patience. Because he sings so nicely. He plays so nicely that for the gopis, again, their divine romanticism, their agitation in Purva Rag is escalating more and more and more. And he plays more and more beautifully. So the gopis increase their longing for a meeting. So basically, that's what I want to share today. This is half of the explanation of the verse. So and maybe at this point, again, you may ask, who is the gopi? Because who's the main character of this verse? The Pulindis in one way, but in another way is that gopi whose kumkum ended in Krishna's feet and that ended in the forest and that ended in the Pulindis. So who is that gopi whose kumkum ended at Krishna's feet and then at the Pulindis body? We will see it tomorrow. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai. Shri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Shri Krantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Venu Gita ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Hortman Hari, Andinanda Brajasri Nampadari Nuna Vikshasar Sam Harikatvat Gitam Punati Bhuvanatri.